Today's deep dive is sponsored by Cufflinks.com, the official sponsor of our whole season of podcast Winterfall. Every episode, Cufflinks.com/DVR. Use code GOT20 to get 20% off any Game of Thrones item. It's awesome. Check it out. Targaryen, Stark, whatever you want. They got all the sigils. They got all the great stuff. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code GOT20 today.
I am Sir Meryn Trant, Honorable Knight of the Kingsguard, and I wish to say hello to Sir W. Axel Foley of the DVR Podcast Network and the podcast Winterfell. I want to wish you luck with your network. I also want to tell others, on pain of death, to follow and listen to W. Axel Foley and Health Senzazo as they break down the final season of Game of Thrones. Personally, I think they're up-jumped cutthroats, nothing more. But listen to them anyway, or I will find you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Podcast Winterfell. You have entered the deep dive, our flagship podcast of the week. It's me, Axel Foley, and Heath Solo. We're going to be breaking it down for you, getting deep. We got some theories. We got some fun stuff. I just want to start off by telling you, of course, go to dvrpodcast.com, go to podcastwinterfell.com. I say DVR podcast because we do a ton of other podcasts. I do a podcast called Daily DVR where I talk about all types of other shows, Better Call Saul, Mayans, News. We do Westworld Theory Cast. We got a lot of stuff going. We also have a Patreon. And I want to welcome Beth, Laura, Vernon, and Dennis, people that Heath knows. Some of these, I think Laura, Vernon, and Dennis, man, we've known them going back to the Lost days, so it's awesome to have them as patrons. You get hundreds of exclusive podcasts, all ad-free. You get a say in what we do. Go to patreon.com/DVR. Now, I'm going to bring Solo in because Solo, I know you got a chance to see Ian Beattie do that clip, and he does mess up your name a little bit, and I kept it in the podcast today so people could hear it, and Donald's been making fun of it. But your name is not Heath Tensasatazo, it's Heath Sentazo, correct?
Oh my God, this is breaking news, okay? I had no idea he was trying to say my name. No, so Donald had tweeted me that, like Heath Sent. I thought he was just drunk and he was just like goofing around with my name. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. But I want to thank my friend Jamie Stalker, who contacted Ian Beattie and got us that clip. That is actually Sir Meryn Trant doing that audio right there. So we want to thank him. Just to remind you, we do a initial reaction on Sunday night that I'm doing with guests this Sunday. My guest for episode 2 is the amazing Ken, the former podcasters from Crippled, Bastards, and Broken Things. Then on Monday night, we're doing a YouTube show. We have ended the fan call-in. If you want to get on a podcast and you've never done it before, email me. We'll send you a private Google Hangouts link, and you can come on with DJ Tim Hines. You don't need to use video, but we got to move away from TalkShoe and do YouTube. So that's 10 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel, Podcast Winterfell. Friday, the final thing I'm going to talk about, Friday is our feedback. That's with Tracy and Mike. We want to thank everyone. We got a lot of feedback this week. The cutoff's going to be every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. So send that in as soon as you can after the show. I'll forward it over to Mike and Tracy, and you'll hear that podcast. I'll release that probably Friday morning or so. That's all the announcements I got. Thank you for listening. Heath, I'm going to let you talk. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing great, Axel. This is definitely different this season because normally last time we did the initial reaction together. This time I've had a few days to kind of soak it in.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting how you and I attack this, and also the fact you know, in the last 3 days you've been on like 1,000 podcasts. So like, I don't know if you're done with Game of Thrones or you still want to continue. What do you want to do, buddy?
I'm ready to talk, man. honestly, you know me. I mean, I could talk about this show for 3 or 4 hours a day easily. It's good to take a little break. I'm always on the Twitter, and hi, everyone on Twitter. I'm always tweeting at people and doing dumb theories and having fun. But this is your chance, man. I've talked a lot. I want to hear what you have to say. And it is different because we're not going to do like the scene by scene strict breakdown. Because by this time you've probably rewatched the episode. You don't need us to be doing that. So we're just going to kind of talk and find our way into different big topics and have fun with it that way.
Okay, I do want to tease. I have a big theory. I don't know. Well, who knows? I haven't listened to any other podcasts. It might be already thought of, but I don't want to jump into it. Maybe just yet. I want to go. But before you bring up anybody else's theories, I want first crack, just in case. So I look smart, if that's okay. But anyway, my initial reaction. Sorry, I often say it like that. I love the episode. It was exactly what I needed. And I just want to say people need to relax. R-E-L-A-X, relax. I saw some posts like, man, I was expecting more. Man, this and that. I'm like, first of all, it's been a year and a half since we saw the episode. In order to get to this final chapter, we need to see where pieces have been moved, what's going on. And I thought it was the perfect setup because shit's going to get bat crazy, okay? And we needed to get reacquainted with our characters. Though sometimes, it could have felt faster. It could have felt like, oh, that was quick. But come on, guys. We're at a point now. We know these characters very well. We don't need 5 scenes of Arya and Gendry saying, hello, you look great. Yeah, oh, you look, oh, good. And the fact that they put the dragon first date in there, I thought it probably wouldn't have fit any other way, to be honest with you. It was good that it was in the first episode. It just, because the first episode has so many great beats. And part of my big theory is because of the where they go with the dragon, where they land, and a certain comment that was made. So maybe whenever you say Solo, hit me with the theory, I'll go into it. But all in all, I loved the episode. I thought it was perfect. And I'm so jazzed for the next 5 episodes.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I really enjoyed it. And you could say the calm before the storm. Having done a whole full rewatch of the series ending right before this episode, you know, we entered, they you know, the Starks, we were introduced to them. Ned's called to King's Landing. We're finding all about 17 years ago in Robert's Rebellion. By the end of last season, all that had been concluded, right? Littlefinger is executed. We find out he was the one who killed Jon Arryn, Joffrey. He talks Lysa, and we kind of end that. And now what we need is to find out what the power structure is and what's going to happen next. I mean, gosh, we went from a show where there were 18 different houses and all of a sudden Lady Olenna's showing up and Tywin and this one and that one. And now there aren't that many people alive. You know what I mean? Like, we got to be honest. People have been complaining. Oh, but you know, it took place. It's just at Winterfell and like 2 scenes at King's Landing. Well, and of course, the last scene, which was awesome, the horror at the House of Umber. But where else were they supposed to go? Are they just supposed to like go over to like Bravo so you can see some guy shine shoes? That's not what's happening. This, you know, exactly. Like you said, we have to, the pieces have to come together. And the main point is who's telling everybody what to do?
Yeah. And how ironic is it? Because the episode ends with Jamie C. and Bran, correct?
Yep.
Okay. How ironic the first episode of the series ends with Jamie pushing Bran out the window.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's irony. I just the whole love thing, that. You know, it started with a kid climbing a tree like Bran. They do that. That was a whole mirror on purpose for the circle to kind of begin again, but end. it remains unbroken, Solo.
I know. That's what actually I meant to say. I often throw in semi-big words, and I don't know what they mean. So, yeah, irony is the bad. I'm thinking of the Iron Islands, which I always thought was the Iron Islands because of Iron Throne on Twitter. So
Iron Throne, baby.
So
go ahead, buddy.
Oh, no. Axel Folo, I bend the knee to you, brother.
I was just going to say, do you want to kind of start off with like this Northern meeting, or what did you want to kind of dive into first? What scenes or part of this was most interesting to you?
My favorite scene of, well, I'm going to go with my favorite scene and a favorite moment, and then we can track to, it's at Winterfell, but then we can hit all the Winterfell stuff if that's cool. And then I'll drop my theory.
Do it.
After the Winterfell stuff. But so the very almost like Luke Skywalker hood of Jaime coming to Winterfell. I mean, we all knew it. We could tell. Okay, we haven't seen Jaime yet. That's probably him. And Bran waiting for him. His reaction, Jaime's reaction to Bran, is kind of what I've been waiting for the whole series. To see Bran, quote unquote, confront him, but then as the series has gone on, it's changed. Like at first I'm like, I want Jaime to get a knife in the heart and Bran to kill him with needle or something. And now with the Jaime Lannister and Bran journey, now I'm just like, oh my God, I hope they get along, you know. But I just love the moment, the look of shock and what the hell is going on of Jaime looking at Bran. Again, this was an episode of a lot of different faces, if you will, a lot of reactions, and some of the best acting is reacting. And that moment there, I loved it. Now, a couple questions I have for you really quick about that. Let's start off. Bran was, I didn't realize he was waiting. I didn't pick up he was waiting for Jaime the whole time. I thought he was just chilling like the air. I realize he said he's waiting for a friend or something. But so I guess in his Google network of the Wayward Tree, he, I mean, I understand how it works. Did he not know exactly when Jaime was going to come? He probably, I know Jaime is the key, must be the key to something to happen, or else he would have been there waiting with armed guards to take him down.
That's an interesting point. You know what? I hadn't thought of that, Solo, because I want to shout out Sandy, who corrected me on a rewatch, and I never got to mention it, that it was actually Sansa that has the connection with Bran and is talking to him and taking what he says seriously. She pointed to some stuff that happened in season 7. And you saying that makes me think that's a good point. He could have said to Sansa, someone dangerous is coming. Be ready. It's Jaime. Or I just know something is coming. We don't know that Bran knows the future, right? He knows what's happening. And he knows what's happened. But I think that we should dial Bran back just a little bit, because I hear a lot of people talking as if the show has established that he can tell the future. And I do not think the show has established that. What the show has established is that he seems to see what happened before, what's happening now, but also the pattern in which events work together. And that's why it's called like this Werewood Network, right? Like he sees the lattice work that keeps all, like all of our, I don't know, our beings connected. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking exactly. I think now, real quick before, so when he was with Jojen Reed, now did Jojen see the future or was it Bran of just bits and pieces of like fire and him dying? That was Jojen, right?
Right. I think Jojen had more of this glimpses of things that could happen I mean, honestly, I'm not quite sure because the but the only thing in doing the rewatch, I try to pay attention to, but you know, the language they use changes, right? And a lot of times, it's magical language, so they're not saying "I see the future." They're saying things like "I see a hint of what may come." You know what I mean, bro?
Right.
So it's like, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I think it's a feeling. Like if you have the past and the present, and you've seen all these things, and
like the waves.
With the future, I believe it's he might have a feeling like he may not know exactly what Jamie's gonna do as a positive, say, or if he's gonna die or what, but he might through everything have this feeling that overcomes him, like, oh, this is gonna be important, and I'll know it once we get there,
right? Because he can kind of see Jamie's path. Right. But people don't always follow their path. So
there you go.
That's what I'm.
There's the rub, as they say.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I think that that has to factor into Bran. So he says he's waiting for a friend, but he also sees Sam and he also sees Jamie. But I think in Bran's mind, if you were to ask him, did you mean Sam or Jamie? His answer would be something Zen like, yes. You know, like he wouldn't answer.
Yeah.
And then
it could have been both.
Yeah.
It could be both.
Or neither. Or no.
What or I, not. Yeah.
Yeah. What I meant was I was seeing someone. I mean, I think at this point for us to kind of latch on to that, I think we can kind of only see what Bran tells us, like what he shows us, you know, for now. Because I was joking a little bit on the Twitter yesterday and I put up a picture of Bran staring. And I was like, for generations to come, people will be saying, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Bran looked at them. Right? Like, we'll be talking about it later. We'll be like, oh, remember when he looked at Tyrion? Oh, we should have known. Oh, remember when he looked at Dany? Oh, my God. And it's like, he looked at everybody.
Remember when he was on the privy and he saw – oh, no, wait.
You know, remember when he was just waiting? He wasn't waiting on a lady. He was waiting on a friend. You don't remember that? That makes me think of that song. You remember that song?
Oh, what song?
Waiting on the lady. Remember that? With Mick Jagger and David Bowie?
Oh, that's a good one. Waiting on the train.
Yeah,
or whatever. Yeah.
They're like on
that.
Its steps.
Oh, I'm going
like
to download
Brownstone
that
in New York. That was a good video, early MTV. Anyway.
Just waiting. Oh, okay.
I think that's a great question. And I think we kind of answered it. We don't know because I don't really think Bran can see distinct things that are going to happen.
Yeah. So the arrival at Winterfell, I just love that Arya was kind of us in the crowd, and her reactions pretty crazy. The faces of Arya and being a faceless man and all that. It just was very, very. Ironic. I don't know if ironic's the word. I like using irony and ironic.
You're like
it was
Alanis
cool.
Morissette tonight, so
yeah. Don't you think? It's like Aria. Okay, but so that was awesome, and her look to the Hound I loved the most. And you know what? You know what, Axel? I totally didn't realize this. Wow, the North is all white. I did it.
Yeah.
When Missandei and Grey Worm, I like didn't even think twice, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that's right. This might be the first time.
I was thinking that actually as the kid climbed the tree. I was thinking to myself, they better not have put the Dothraki in front. they're not going to get a warm welcome, you know? But it's enough that the Unsullied are covered by a lot of armor, but then they do that specific shot of Missandei and Grey Worm, and they hold the shot, and then they kind of go back, I think, twice to people in the crowd. And it's like the first reaction is like, oh, my God, like, look at them. They're black people or they're people of color. And then the second reaction is like that thing that they're giving Dany and everybody, which is this is like we don't know if we trust them because they're who is what's their relation now to Jon Snow. So it's like, I mean, it's just like in any society, right? And it's interesting because that was the same way that Dany was treated, remember, when she was with the Dothraki and when she went to all those different cities. They would be like this little pale girl, you know, and like kind of she looked shockingly different with her golden hair and all that kind of stuff. So it shows that this is a world in which people have not really, most people don't travel as much as our heroes, right? This is like an ancient type world. Like when we talk about, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, most people lived their whole lives within the same, what, 10, 20 miles, right? So.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and also too, we have to remember, we've watched 7 seasons of this show. We know everything that's going on. And so the way characters react and do their thing, you got to remember, they don't know all the information we know as a viewer.
True.
So we're like, you know, how can Sansa be acting this way? Well, you know, this woman's come in here with dragons and Dothraki and Unsullied. And so the whole Sansa thing, like I noticed the second time around when Sansa sees the dragon, she's not smirking. She's like, oh boy. Like her reaction isn't necessarily, it's a neutral one, but like crap, shit's beginning. But she, you know, the way she is like, you know, I didn't plan to feed all these people, you know, Dothraki and Unsullied, this greatest army. And she's fighting with Jon in a sense. I get it. Why she's doing it. I may not like it because she can come off as annoying and oh my God, but think about what she's been through and where she's gone. She's just looking after Winterfell the best she can. Yeah. And so that's why I'm kind of like, you know what? You got to give her a break. And I'll be honest. I don't know if I'm not liking Dany as much. I realize Dany, she freed slaves. She went through a tough journey and yeah, I want her to be the queen, but at the same time, at times, it just seems like she has part of that Mad King in her. And I'm confused right now, Axel, whether I should be rooting for her or I'm kind of back and forth with Dany.
I think that's purposeful. I think that's always been purposeful throughout the series. And again, with the rewatch, seeing the ebb and flow of her character. And it's like every 4 or 5 episodes, somebody would be like, yo, don't forget you're the Mad King's daughter. And then another, and then she'd kill somebody, burn somebody. And then somebody would be like, yo, don't forget you're the Mad King's daughter. And she'd be like, okay, I'll be nice. And then she'd burn somebody and kill somebody, you know? So it really is. So, I saw tonight, someone had a good comment. They said, when Cersei blew up the Sept and took out her enemies, we were horrified. But when Dany burned all of the Dothraki leaders alive, we cheered.
Right.
And it's that's why this story is so interesting, right? Because it's impossible to relate this to our real world. But we do, and we have to. We have no other choice because that's the life we lead. And we try to bring our – and we do bring our own ideas into our feelings of these characters. And I feel the same way, Heath. Like I didn't like it last season when Dany kept on telling Jon to bend the knee. I was like, you didn't make the Iron Islands bend the knee. You understood that they could be separate and yet you want to break the wheel, but – I what's the wheel? The only spoke that can be left in the wheel is you as the queen.
Yeah.
Right? You want to be the wheel. So I've always kind of felt that way. And I think this season with Sansa, they're kind of playing off what they did last year with Sansa and Arya. And they are kind of making Sansa more kind of Stannis-like. Like she's got a stick up her ass, right? And she's like, you have to do this, you have to do that. But she's right. She's totally right.
Yeah.
You know, the Night King doesn't have to feed his army.
Yeah. Well, that's an advantage. So I got to say, I did get emotional when Jon and Bran... that reunion, and then it's amazing how Jon realized Bran's not Bran. He was good job by Kit Harington there, and also the Arya and Jon. Now, I am with you. I'm getting sick of the people going, so, what are you doing? You look awful. You know, where's that? And then, haha, I love you.
Right, I know.
Like, it is getting annoying.
Every podcast we start off, and I should be like, oh, I hate you, Heath. Why are we on this damn podcast again? And then you go,
because we love the show, brother.
And then we go, ah, ha, ha. It's a little old, dude. You know, like.
It's so old.
It's a little old.
And it's very old, but.
John just ran to Bran just to say what you were saying.
That's why I loved that one. The Arya and John one, it's a little more complicated because John was very much, oh, this is my Arya. She's got needles. This is my girl. And then all of a sudden he takes kind of a rib at Sansa and she's like, oh, she's the smartest one I ever know. And I'm like, really? She's the smartest one? And then the whole, you know, don't ever forget, you know, that you're a Stark and that this is about our family and Sansa's just trying to protect our family. Mm-hmm. And so there's some interesting undertones there, Axel. I wonder if Arya, like when she first saw Sansa for the first time in a while, she's feeling Jon out again. This one's probably a little more complicated, but she's definitely going back. But her Arya's emotions, like you can see it every meeting with Gendry, with Jon, she'll like be kind of stern and then let her guard down and do the Maisie Williams laugh. And then be stern again, and then question you, and then laugh. It's kind of this up and down. And so I don't know which Arya we're getting at certain points.
I don't know if she knows. And she, right? She's a child that has kind of become no one. And she, I mean, think about it. If you spent your teenage years training at the House of the Undying, you know what I'm saying, dude? I was hanging out at Rutgers, man. We were tripping in the eco. We were having fun, you know? We weren't, like, killing people. She's a complicated thing. And I think that everything she is kind of like a tortoise where she sticks her head out a little. And then she comes back into the, and a lot of the characters are like this because of the trauma they've suffered and the distrust. And like, I was disappointed. Oh, I wanted to ask you this. I'm sorry. Before I get to that is, do you think we still don't know like what Bran is telling people? And I wonder, did Arya say that? Cause she knows Jon's not her brother.
Hmm.
I hadn't thought of that. And she doesn't show him her dagger either. That's Valyrian steel, which she shows to Gendry. And they do the same sword presentation in each scene, which is definitely... Look, you know as well as I, Solo, you don't write scenes like that and shoot scenes like that without knowing you're doing the same scene in the show. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
They probably had it marked as the second sword presentation and notes and when they were writing it and shooting it and talking about which angles they were going to use. And if you look back at it, they're very similar. The way they present their swords, the way they speak to each other. It's supposed to be, again, what makes this show so great, how everything's so in-world, you know, and all the culture and stuff like that. So I don't know. What did you think? Do you think that she knows?
You know, I don't know if I'm supposed to give Arya a lot of credit or not enough or full credit or extra credit. I'm very confused with her character.
Or summer school.
I'm definitely passing her. Don't get me wrong. I don't know. And because she's kind of like an investigator. But at the same time, what knowledge? You know how some detectives or most will only ask questions they know the answers to their suspects. And I don't know if she's disciplined enough to know answers and not come out and be like, "So I know you aren't my brother." It's like, okay, let me ask questions to see if he knows and if he's going to be truthful to me. And so I think she's still feeling Jon out, and even though, but she does when she's hugging him, because she'll say like, you know, don't ever forget it, and then hug him and be all happy. And I'm like, that's weird. So yeah, I don't know. It was a weird moment. As happy as I was to see them get together, I'm weirded by it because it wasn't just like, you know, me and you haven't seen each other in 5 years. And I'm like, brother, and we hug. And it's like, oh, we need to get some ale and watch some Game of Thrones together. And then there, it's just it's back and forth. Like there's,
yeah.
So is she feeling him out? Does she know? I got to believe she knows something, but I don't know if Arya is an assassin. But her judge, I mean, think about, I guess, how she dropped the ball with Littlefinger and the whole Sansa thing last season, but then came together. At what point did she know more than Sansa? We had talked about that.
That's a great, you know, so, what? You're hitting right where I'm at, Solo, which is we still don't, one of the, I have to say, perhaps it's a failure. We will find out. I mean, I don't think that the Sansa and Arya storyline of season 7 was a great success. I think they had an opportunity to let us understand these characters better, but we got Clue, or, you know, like Mousetrap or whatever that show I keep on talking about. I don't know. We don't know how much Bran's telling them. We don't know how they're talking to each other. They're keeping a lot of it secret. And it does heighten our awareness of these scenes, as well as it heightens the mystery and tension around Dany and John and their relationship. So it serves a purpose, but will it be more frustrating than anything? At this point, it's been more frustrating for me.
Yeah, and I think with her, I think we got an answer when she says Sansa's, you know, the smartest woman or smartest person I ever known. That looks to me as Sansa was the one who figured out the Littlefinger thing, yeah, and not Arya.
Well, that's what Sandy said. You know? That's what she wrote in, and she said, if you look back at it, it's really Sansa who put all the pieces together and brought Arya and Bran together, and kind of like
had the idea
of like the pack survives, and that was her who did it. And we have to trust that she's doing this again. Actually, there's some more feedback that was sent in, and Mike and Tracy are going to talk about it. So listen to that podcast for that. But I'm into that. I dig it. And that's why I'm trusting Sansa at this point. And I also want to interject real quickly that I think Sansa and Dany are going to end up being like BFFs and working well together. Maybe, I don't know how much time we have in this season, but maybe even by next episode, they could, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to pit them against each other. But I actually think the characters would work well together. And even when they were at the table, like, I kind of felt like they were, John was like, like he always is. And they were like just sitting there freaking talking. You know what I mean? Like, I think they make a good pair.
She could be the sense of the hand of the queen. Or, I agree with you there. I don't agree. I hope, because I like that. I don't know if that'll happen because I'm just worried.
They're going to get to the drama pretty quick. So I don't know how long they're going to be hanging out together, you know, talking about John.
Or it could be a simple fact where Sansa's about to die and the dragon saves her or something happens, you know, and then she's like, oh, if it wasn't for those dragons, I'd be dead. I don't know.
Before we jump into our Cufflinks ad here, I do want to remind everyone quickly to go check out your death pool at guestthethrone.com. Guestthethrone.com, they've been helping us out, pimping out the pod, putting us on the homepage. We really appreciate that. And they are going to be on the YouTube roundtable on Monday, talking about who lived, who died, also just breaking down the numbers. How many people think this person's going to die? It's going to be a fun segment. They're going to be on there live with DJ Tim Hines. So go over to YouTube, subscribe to Podcast Winterfell, and you'll check us out on Monday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, DJ Tim Hines, the roundtable with the guys from guestthethrone.com. All right, Heath and I are taking a little break. Just remind you to go to cufflinks.com/DVR, use code GOT20. You can also use code ENDGAME30 and get 30% off Marvel Endgame products, actually all Marvel products, over at cufflinks.com. Cufflinks.com encourages you to step up your style when you walk out the door in the morning. Feel good about yourself, and if you have an event, go to cufflinks.com. They've got you covered. You could get matching sets, cool stuff. Come on, you could have a whole Game of Thrones wedding. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Now, we have reached the point in the show. You told me to say it, so I'm going to say it. Hey, Solo, hit us with your big theory.
Okay. Now, it's a statement, and then I have questions to ask you see if this theory could happen.
Okay.
This is like a working with Axel theory.
This is fun.
And shoot me down if someone already has this. Okay, so you know the I think you've mentioned this, and the Twitter, I saw some pictures on how there's a theory out there that Dany could become the Ice Queen.
Yes, yes.
Okay. I'm going to take it a little step further. I think John and Dany will become White Walkers. And they're both, and I have some questions for you on this, but what really solidified it to me, when they rode the dragons, went to the waterfall, and Dany says, "We could stay 1,000 years and no one would find us here." Isn't that what White Walkers do? They go away for thousands of years, not to be found.
You're right, dude. Yeah. Oh, wow. I like that. That's interesting. And you know, that's the theory I've been playing around with. And if you look at the jacket that she's wearing, it looks just like White Walker skin, like the tree, like the weirwood veins of a tree. And it also has some red in it, which somebody, shout them out, apologize, I don't remember your handle, was saying the red parts is just like the bleeding of the eyes from the weirwood, and it's in her jacket too. Now, of course, you and I both know that costume design can sometimes take influence from other places, and it's not necessarily always a clue to plot. You know, we're spitballing here. We're having fun.
Yeah. So,
but I want to hear the rest of it.
Okay. So now I have some, it's like you're, you know, in Washington in front of a microphone and I'm like this, the Senate or the Congress asking you questions.
Oh, I'm ready.
You have to answer. Okay. So I have a few questions for you and some comments, and then we can see if we can put this theory together, because this is a basis of course, you thinking she's become the Ice Queen, and then I just kind of, you got me going. So, if John becomes a White Walker, could he function on his own free will, or do you think his mind just becomes totally different? That's my first question.
I would say that there's a difference between a white, which is an undead zombie, that we have already seen are controlled vampire-like by the White Walker that turns them. If that White Walker is killed, they automatically die and are unanimated, right? Are re-dead.
Mm-hmm.
If John or Dany is turned into a White Walker, it seems as though they would have to undergo the same process that we saw the blonde-haired man, who's actually the stunt man that plays the Night King, go through, tied to a weirwood tree with obsidian shoved into him while some sort of incantation is spoken. So three magical elements and the children themselves who are magical. Can the Night King do this? Or does he even have to do this? Can he just touch a person like he touched the baby and turn them into a White Walker? Because the baby turned into a White Walker, not a white.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not talking whites are off the table.
Yeah,
we're
white is they die and get resurrected.
I don't want
but
that.
I just like to make that, you know, I don't want to assume because we are, you know, it's a complicated show.
That's true. And the dragon, of course, he turned it right away.
Yes.
So, because it could be a point where, say, Dany is turned and then maybe Dany turns John. Who knows?
So to answer your question, I believe that yes, if what we've seen is true, they would have some sort of agency on their own. But we don't know if all of the other White Walkers are the 100 of Craster's sons, because remember there's 101. The 101 one was the baby we saw turned, and little Sam is number 100. If they are all White Walkers, because they were turned by the Night King, would he not have the ultimate power over them as well?
Which brings me to a point, because no one's ever killed the Night King. You know, the children, like you said, the children of the forest created him. And it's like, why did the children of the forest create the Night King? Do we have that answer?
No, except...
Okay.
Well, we do. We do. The answer we have is in the history and lore and some of the books, but in the show, Leaf says to Bran, it was a final act of to protect ourselves against you, mankind.
Okay.
They were and that's the legend that we know of, that the wall was because there was a battle between man and the White Walkers, and then the wall was built with the help of the children. There's some kind of magic in it. I think they even mention that. Mm-hmm. They do mention that in the show. But the White Walker were created because the children were going like extinct, and that it was like their, you know, the final thing that they could do, their final choice.
Because see, I think if John and Danny were to become White Walkers together, I think they would protect, and it wouldn't be just them trying to come and kill humans and turn people. I think it'd be more of a protecting thing, and they could do good. Now, what if you killed the Night King? Do you become the Night King? Or you just kill him and everything is hunky-dory? Like, I'm wondering if there's a catch. If you're the one that kills the Night King, if you all of a sudden become the Night King or not.
I don't know. I don't know where you got that from, but I think it's kind of cool.
I got it from my head. This I think brain of mine.
And I don't think so, man. I think that there's nothing that's been said about that. I don't know. That's an interesting idea, though. It sure is an interesting idea. Can I go back and just say that the reason why I said no originally when you asked if we know why they created him is because it was such a brief interaction that's all we know, right? You know, and so many characters lie on this show and history is a lie that I guess I would say the answer is yes. They did specifically tell us they were created to, you know, guard against man and defend them, and it got out of hand. But who knows what? I mean, you know, we don't know nothing about these little children creatures.
You know what I'm saying? I
know. All we know so far is they cause trouble. So, you know, and throw little grenades that explode into fire.
Yeah,
those were kind of cool.
So that's kind of my tinfoil hat, crackpot, whatever you want to say. It just that line, we could stay 1,000 years and no one would find us here. Like, why would she say that?
Yeah. Like, it's fun, dude. It's fun.
Just, yeah. It's I mean, fun. It could be totally just, you know, stringing us along and little clues that could go either way. She could be talking about, you know, after this is all done, it would be nice to escape and not deal with this crap anymore.
Yeah.
I just found it interesting that they do harp on, you know, the White Walkers for thousands of years are...
I will say this, Solo. That is a callback to what Ygritte says to Jon when they are in the cave and they have sex, remember?
Mm-hmm.
She actually says to him, we could just stay here and no one would know it. But Dany does add that 1,000-year thing. So that's interesting. Now, can I add, Brett?
Yes.
I stole this piece of feedback because Brett blew my mind, and I knew we were going to talk about this because I was going to bring this up at the end just for fun because I think it's fun. And Brett says this: if the theory of Daenerys becoming the Night Queen happens and she is the Unburnt, does that mean that she would be immune to fire, dragon glass, and Valyrian steel, thus being invincible? Perhaps the Night King wants to die and pass the torch, or perhaps he wants to evolve into an even stronger form of himself and will warg into and or merge with Daenerys.
Yeah,
that's
I thought
crazy.
Of that too. Brett, you're on the right track of. Well, we're all crazy, but I always think of the same thing. I'm like, what, you know, why are the whites and the White Walkers? Why are they travel? Why are they doing this? Why do they want to destroy? And I'm like, the Night King probably wants a queen. I don't see any women White Walkers hanging with them.
Well, there is Solo. I should say that Tony Teflon, who's a YouTube dude that Justin introduced me to, he had a theory video that he released yesterday, and I watched it, and he's been doing them for a while, and I think book people have theories about this as well. But if you look at the...
Well, we don't care about them, though.
Well...
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to be one of them. When this thing is over, I'm reading the books, man.
Me too.
I'm excited for it, dude. I'm getting very excited.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know.
Sort of.
That was DJ Tim Hines there, man. Starting static.
Yeah. Yeah, what the heck? Well, DJ's a part of me, so That's true.
The DJ comes out.
All right.
But if you look at the sigil of the Targaryens and you look at the symbol of the burning arms that we saw in the end of the episode, and you look at the pattern in that the White Walkers have created before. Now, this pattern is also inherent in the children and in the area where the Night King was created, but it's also very similar to the Targaryen sigil. And he has an idea that this guy was a Targaryen. Now, he has a bigger eye. I'm not going to spoil. Go watch his video. But there's the idea that the reason why the Night King can even ride a dragon, dead or undead, is because he's a Targaryen. And the children purposefully chose a Targaryen because they're in this history and lore, there's the idea that the Targaryens are basically magic genetic mutants, magic blood, dragon blood mixed with humans and magic incantations. And this is why they have that connection to dragons and are unburnt, unbroken, you know, all that kind of shit, why they're magical. So there would be a further justification that he would want Dany or need Dany or Jon to serve his ends. You know? And then if we go further, do you want me to go further, Solo?
Hey, Axel, can you go further?
Okay. If you go further, last season we had talked about the idea that the Lord of Light is the Night King. Not meaning that he is this god or whatever, but that he is pretending. He is sending the visions. He was the one who told the Hound to go to the Copperhead, or what was it, the diamond-shaped mountain. And that diamond-shaped mountain was actually in the picture when the Night King is created. So has the Night King actually been pushing all these forces around, even the political stuff we've seen, whether it's killing Renly with the ghost, whether it's maybe those little... leeches that they put on Gendry's wee-wee and tried to kill Joffrey and all the kings, right? Maybe that really was the Night King or something. But I'm just saying that this idea...
Think of this.
Right, of Dany becoming the Night Queen, or that does have some validity within the lore of this show. Whether that will actually happen in the TV show, I think... I don't know. Probably not at this point, because it's more a straight ahead story of maybe one of them dies. I think perhaps that's where they'll go. But if it happens, it would be pretty cool. But it's probably going to be more of a straight ahead. This reminds me a little bit of the Dharma stuff we get into when we were talking about Lost. And it ended up being about the characters. And I'm okay with that. So when it does end up being about the characters and Dany doesn't become the Night Queen, she just dies or burns up in flames finally because something weird happens. Where did that idea come from? I don't know. I have to add some weird theory. I can't help it.
Think about this though, Axel. The Lord of Light bringing back Barrick, Jon Snow, and at Hardhome, the that's what the Night King, or before that, but even at Hardhome at John's, the Night King bringing people back to life, even though they're undead.
Yeah.
It's just, it's risen. It's that, boom, right there. Who knows, that, man?
Solo, you know what? That's a very, that's like almost like a scientific way of looking at it. If we ask, who have we actually seen bring people, have the power and know and use it confidently? The Night King. The other two people we've seen do it, it's just kind of happened out of their own sheer will. You know what I mean? Though we know Melisandre has that weird magical necklace. But, you know, dude, and if it was the Night King that did that, why? Why bring Jon back? When you look at this scene, when you said about Hardhome, when you watch that scene when the White Walker attacks Jon, look at the way he automatically kills the Thenn guy, but he plays with Jon. And then when he actually swings at him, Jon swings at him, it's almost like he's surprised. You know, like that the humans have figured it out or something, or like it's a little, I don't know. It could have, who knows? This could all be connected.
Who knows?
You never know.
Who knows? So that's going to be for the season. That's just the theory I got. We'll see what happens. Now I just want to kind of comment on things and enjoy the rest of the season. I'm done theorizing. No, just kidding. But with 5 episodes left, I just want to,
You can do both, though. Yeah. I mean, look, I think that there's...
No, I know.
You know,
things will come up.
Yeah, you can get caught up in it, but it is a fun thought. And the thing is that I think why with this show it's kind of fun is because when you start learning about the book or reading the books, crazy stuff like that happens. You know what I mean? Like, weird, like, the show has pulled back a lot on that.
I know the first, excuse me, you're like my Night King. You cough, I cough. The whole thing with Tyrion doing a ball joke with Varys. So my whole thing with Tyrion is I think he was getting nervous getting there. He's a Lannister going to Winterfell.
Yeah.
And doing the joke kind of gets him off track. But you know, the whole thing with Sansa, you know, he really thinks Cersei's going to bring the army. And Sansa's like, I used to think you were the smartest person I know. And Tyrion hasn't made bad battle plans, the wrong thing. You know, but you got to remember too, as the Starks are reuniting, we finally are getting that. And that's why I loved this episode, because it's finally comes together. I've been wanting the Starks, if they make it, anybody to get together. And the Lannisters are splitting apart. They were always together, and then with daughters and sons dying, but now Cersei's in, you know, King's Landing, Jaime and Tyrion are at Winterfell. And I sensed this when Tyrion was talking to the North folk that, you know, he's about to go to war, of course, with the White Walkers, but then in essence, it's with the Lannister army not coming. He's like, man, I got to fight against my own people.
Yeah.
And it's just, and think about this journey he's gone through. So he's not, and plus he doesn't drink as much anymore, and he was smart when he drank for the most part.
That is so true, though. You're right, Solo. He was he was very nervous this episode, and when he stood up to speak, he was not as confident. He was more kind of like Tyrion, and I think in acting you see this, right, Solo? You lean in or you lean back. Your body language is important. Maybe a little bit more in theater, but on film too, I think you know, and you see him, he wasn't leaning in. He was like leaning back. He was kind of like bracing for what was to come from the audience. And he didn't even seem to really believe the words he was saying. There's a lot of people who were theorizing that Cersei and Tyrion made some kind of other deal, that he had to give something up or somehow betray Dany. And we also remember that look that he gave. Was he looked down the hallway at Jon and Dany when they were making love behind the door on the boat, and he was kind of being a little peeping Tyrion over there? That was Tyrion. And everybody was talking about that last season. They were saying, oh, he's going to betray her. You know, but Dany always has these betrayers. And I don't know about that. I just think he's on uneven ground. And you're right. And I think Jamie coming back is going to be really great. Now, you know, how is that? And then, I mean, I think that's going to be kind of cool. And I hope that they, their one scene, remember when they were in the jail cell before Tyrion was going to be go on trial?
Mm-hmm.
And they had a real emotional scene. And I think that those two actors work really well together.
Yeah, no, that's, I agree. And you know what? That might be what gets Tyrion out of his funk.
Yeah, yeah.
His losing streak is having his brother Jaime there. And the two of them are going to have to, I mean, they're like outsiders looking in.
Yeah, and so, and Jaime's going to come with the news, which maybe if Bran already knows, and that's why Sansa said it, that the army ain't coming.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to band together as Lannisters because they're not going to sell each other out. You know, Tyrion's going to kind of have to stand up for his brother because that's standing up for himself.
Mm-hmm. So also, I was really we talked a lot about the Hound and how I look, you know, on our preview cast. I love the character. It's written so well. I love the Hound. And then at first glance, the way he talks to Arya and calls her a cold bitch and all that, I'm like, oh my God, the Hound, what? But then upon second rewatch, if you look at his facial expressions and how he's figuring things out, first of all, she did leave him to die, but him saying you're a cold bitch is, and that's probably why you survived, is because he realizes she's something different now. Yeah. And she's more, you know, and he picks that up and he almost is like giving her a nod, like, you know what? You know, good on you. You're, so it, at first I'm like, oh man, the Hound, whatever. But, it was more of a quick realization. Hound's got other things on his mind. And so, the Hound's back in my good graces. Late Sunday night, I wasn't sure, but now I'm back with the Hound.
You know, you put it in a good way. And I was a little frustrated by that scene because I wanted them to finally express some kind of love for each other. But in truth, their relationship was one of he taught her to kill. And he taught her, aided her on her journey to becoming an assassin. And that's their relationship. And I guess, you know, they weren't going to hug and everything. And she had a little bit of a softer side there with Gendry, of course, because their relationship is different. But yeah, you're right, man. Like, that kind of was in keeping with those characters.
Yeah. And so that actually makes, you know, that's the thing about, we talked about the show. It's such a rewatchable show. And I'm so glad, like I told, you know, I've told friends of mine that like, oh, you know, the final season of Game of Thrones, should I binge it all in 2 days? No. Well, you can't, but you got to enjoy this show and you got to, and you, I'm glad we watched it week to week since the pilot. Because it's great to binge for a rewatch and pick new things up, but for the first time, I really need this week to relax and think and enjoy. And I was very, throughout the series, I was very hard on like Sam and Gilly. I wasn't a big Sam fan. I'd have little spurts of him where I liked him and I didn't. And then I'll be honest, I really love Sam now. And let me tell you, John's acting as Sam in, I mean, when Danny tells Sam about the family killing the father and the brother and then the whole thing with John and the Crypts being a Targaryen. I mean, what a great acting moment. I mean, even when he's there, he's like, oh, Milady. Oh, he's like, which guy? Like, it's just, he has this tempo of comedic acting that's great. But then we saw the emotions come out. And him crying, but trying to be strong and, you know, asking for a pardon for taking some books. But then his brother's dead. And it just, wow, Axel. Yeah. I'll tell you, Samwell Tarly really struck a chord with me this episode.
Yeah, that was great acting. And he's getting a lot of credit for it, too, I see in the community and critics. And I've always loved Sam. I felt like right from jump, he was the Hurley. And I really like Gilly too. I think she's one of the best actresses or actor playing on the show. I think she's fantastic. And in the scenes that she's been given, she's kind of blown me away. And this scene here with Sam, when he finds out, was to me the most surprising and affecting scene of the whole episode because it was unexpected. But in a way, it was totally expected because he's a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve. And even though his father treated him like crap, he was already crying when he found out about his father. And then he thought his brother was still alive. And then I was like, wait, I thought he was crying because he thought his brother was dead. But no, he was really crying about his dad who treated him like shit, you know, and wanted to kill him. Basically said, I'm going to kill you unless you go to the Night's Watch. So it was great, man. It was great. And it totally affected the way he told John about John's lineage. It was like a whirlwind of a couple scenes from Danny and him and Jorah to him and Bran to John and him was like, I think looking back at it, it was a lot of great acting, man. And he just held those three scenes together.
Yeah. It was funny because it felt like Danny and Jorah, you know how, you know, Jorah smirks with like, always, you know, just, they're like two parents, know, like dude. With a
and
kid.
And he's always in the background, either making like a sour face or like this case, he's like, Khaleesi, do not mention that. My Khaleesi, please listen to me. I love you and don't tell him you burned all his family up.
Now, I think going back to King's Landing with Qyburn coming to Bronn while he's having his four-way and he couldn't finish. I think the theory, like Cersei's basically gives Bronn gold and is like, go kill Jaime and Tyrion. We don't think it. I don't even think she's said him. If he happens to do it, great. But I think she just wanted to get Bronn because she wanted Bronn dead. So I kind of think it's like, oh, the White Walkers broke through the wall. They have no shot. You know, let's send Bronn. And if he kills, you know, my brother's fine. If not, he's going to die. I think it's more of a get Bronn out of there so she can surround herself.
Yeah. Hey, I think you figured it out, Solo. I was trying to figure this out, what other reason Cersei could have. But what other better reason is that she just thinks that the White Walkers are going to kill everybody that's in the north. So she just send him up there. And if he takes the gold and kills the brothers, fine. If he dies himself, fine. Who cares? They're all going to die anyway. And it gets him out of my hair.
Yeah. I think it's that we're so focused on if Bronn would do it or not. I think we know the drill. He won't.
He, of course.
There's no freaking way.
Of course not.
Yeah. Because he's dead if he tries to do it, because Brienne or Podrick or someone will kill him.
But also, look, there was, I can't remember who mentioned this, but I want to give a shout out. There's foreshadowing in the fact that he had the choice between the gold or killing the dragon, and he went and killed the dragon. So I think that in the end, Bronn, you know, we don't know him as he's always been an auxiliary kind of funny character. Like you go back and think of those silly scenes with the sand snakes. But this is he's going to be the third amigo here. You know what I'm saying? The three amigos got to ride together, the two brothers and Bronn, and it's going to be fun.
And I guarantee you, well, I don't guarantee you, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jamie's having trouble fighting, and all of a sudden Bronn shows up and helps him out and is like, you know, my sister sent to kill you, but I'm here to help, you know, whatever. Anyway, you know, something stupid. But no, I think it's just going to be the opposite. But yeah, no, I think that's what we should have been focused on.
Yeah.
Now, I was shocked Euron was able to bed the queen, if you will. And Lady Solo was just like, oh, she's horny. But Cersei doesn't do things without having a reason. She could have been.
Cersei gets horny, dude. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Especially now. What do you make of that with Cersei and Euron? I mean, everyone's kind of. I've heard rumblings about the pregnancy and that whole theory.
She drank wine here, and she didn't drink wine last season. Is she having sex with Euron so she can say the baby's her and she's drinking the wine because she's just Cersei and doesn't care? Is she faking the pregnancy? Ken has said maybe she's having a hysterical pregnancy. There's a historical reference that Ken made to a English queen that this occurred with. So, I mean, if you ask me, I think Cersei just needs Euron. I think Euron is an integral part of her plan.
And by giving him sex and giving him his thing, now she's got him.
Just like she told Sansa.
If she keeps putting it off, he's going to bail.
Yeah, you got to give them you end up giving the men what they want, so just give it to them anyway. You know? And then if you do, you can use it against them. You can manipulate them. And you know, look, I do have a big theory that I'm going to drop. I think Cersei's going to blow up all of King's Landing. I'm not, you know, if it happens, it happens. But I think the clues are there once, twice, three times with the wildfire and escape on Euron's ship. Do a reverse Blackwater where they watch it. She thinks that the dead are going to kill everybody. Then they're going to come to King's Landing. She'll use the Golden Company as a way to maybe stave them off or lure them into King's Landing. And then she'll blow up the city that her blood is on the ground all over from when she had to do that walk of shame. And the idea came to me. I had thought of it before, but upon rewatch and watching her do that walk of shame and bleed all over King's Landing and walk that long walk, that she hates that city. And she wants it to burn just like the Mad King. But I still think, even if I'm wrong, it's just really more about needing Euron, and he's one of the only pieces she can manipulate. Right?
Right.
Like, she has to have power over him some way. And actually, giving him sex is a good way to have power over him, because he's going to want it again.
Yeah. And that Joe Strickland, or whatever his name is, Joe Jones or Harry Strickland, he looks more of Cersei's type.
Ooh, the Golden Company guy?
Yeah. Harry Strickland, I think is his name.
Face on him, man. Yeah, he's got quite a face on him, doesn't he? He's like a cartoon. It's like everything's exaggerated. That's good casting.
He looks like a faceless man in Bravos. Yeah. He could be Jack and Hagar, dude.
Well, I have to jump in here. I was listening to History of Westeros, and Aziz had a great theory that when she said, I have plans for Dany, that she's going to hire a faceless man to kill Dany, and they're going to come back involved, because like she's kind of really relying on Bravos, the Bank of Bravos, the Golden Company, right? What's the other thing we know there? The faceless men. So wouldn't that be interesting if Arya and maybe it's going to be Jockin? You know, maybe it's the waif. That would be kind of cool. But I don't know what Cersei's going to do. That's why I'm coming up with so many ideas, because she's capable of anything at this point. You know what I mean?
Now, do you think Qyburn was very concerned? Like when he goes, I got bad news. You know, the White Walkers and the dragon broke through the wall. I mean, he comes it with bad news. And of course, she's like, good, or whatever. Now, do you think because let's talk about your boy Qyburn before we end the show. Because you've been talking about Qyburn and how, you know, all these things he could be developing. Like, I think we can't forget about him. And you're right to do some theories and to think about him. And I'm just wondering, does he agree with everything Cersei does? Does he have his own agenda going on? Like, Was he concerned when she says good? I couldn't quite gauge.
I think he was, because remember, Qyburn is a maester, and he was thrown out, and you know, Cersei, the queen, saved him and made him the hand. But he knows of the history of these things, and if he knows now that it's real, and also being a person who's dealt with the dead, created or reanimated the mountain, right? You know, I think that he's going to play a part in this. I think he's one of these characters that you got to pay attention to. He knows about the dead. And I had a little theory. Maybe he'll somehow be able to mess with the way they control the whites, or maybe you know, I don't know, people have said he would create, you know, at one point I thought he'd create more like Cersei's own army of the dead with the same process mm-hmm. that he created the mountain. But I don't know, maybe it will be though that he goes against Cersei because he, you know, and we see him torn, like we've seen so many characters torn in their allegiances, and he'll be like, well, look, you know, and maybe the last straw will be him leaving, you know, then she'll have no one except for Euron and the mountain. Yeah.
Or we could do a spinoff series, Qyburn, Torn and Dorne.
Well, hey, I don't want to finish yet. Well, what do you think about Qyburn?
Yeah, no,
do
neither
you
have do
any
I.
Thoughts?
You know, I, you know, I'm with you. I'm trying to gauge. Qyburn's been such. Yes, and he's been such a right hand man for Cersei, and I just gotta believe he's smart enough to. You think he'd want something for himself. Now he's basically doing the things that he've always wanted to do, and he's the queen is, you know, backing him up. I'm just wondering if he's got that escape plan or do you think though, if Cersei were to blow up King's Landing with wildfire, would Dany be able to survive that type of fire?
That's a good question. Maybe that's why she wants to take out Dany. She has her own plans, a different plan for Dany. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm at a loss, and that's why I'm guessing. The only thing we do know is that she seems confident. She doesn't seem to be worried, and she is making moves. So as long as that's happening, I'm worried about Cersei. You know what I mean? Like, as long as she's in the game, we should be worried. What the hell is she going to do? We'll find out next episode. I could have a million guesses. I mean, you know, all the kids are dead. Jamie's gone. What else has she got to live for? She just want, you know, the last time she said what she wanted was with Jamie. And that was last season when she said they will rule. And Jamie said, well, what happens if we have nothing to rule and all that? And he said, it doesn't matter. We'll just kill all our enemies and we'll figure it out. But now he's gone.
Yeah. So what do you, have you done any extensive work on what that weapon Arya wants Gendry to make?
Nah, man. It looks like some sort of like staff that shoots something or has a different top or I don't know. There's spoilers out there, of course. Like there's a million clickbait articles what this weapon really means, but I won't read any of that. I'm just going to look at the show and see what other people say. Somebody probably already told me because they read the article, but I have no idea what that thing is. But it's interesting that Arya has a plan, and it makes me wonder, where did this plan come from? You know what I mean? Like, is it from Bran?
I don't know.
You know?
That's why I'm asking you. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I'm just hopefully... You know, and now does everyone know, as my voice gets higher,
does everyone know sudden, when it's time to change?
And you got to rearrange who you are is what you're going to be. Pretty much. Does everyone know Valyrian steel kills a White Walker?
It seems to be common knowledge at this point. I mean, okay. I think we can say that in this world, they grew up with these myths and legends. And now that they're coming true, they have that knowledge, you know? It's just like if vampires came real, we would know about like garlic and light and, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We kind of know about that stuff and you'd have to kind of like test it out as soon as it happened. Like modern films, they do that stuff now, right? But, that's how I think people kind of talk about this stuff like that, you know? But people do know that it's so special. I think that's the initial reaction that you get. Can I ask you a question? Yeah. We didn't talk Please. About the actual dragon ride itself. What did you think of it?
Oh, the dragon ride. I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
Because, well, the one thing I did have an issue with was Danny going, you know, he's like, "How do, what do I hang on to? What do I do?" And he goes, "Well, it's been nice knowing you, Jon Snow." Like, it was just like, I kept thinking, like, if he falls off the dragon, would the dragon swoop down and catch him? Or would he just die? Like, you know.
Yeah, she was pretty cavalier about it, man.
This is the thing, though. There's the scene in, I forget what episode in season 7, where Jon pets the dragon, and it's kind of like, you know, like we said, like,
yes,
you know, it's her kid, and she saw how the dragon warmed up to Jon and vice versa. So I got to believe in this suspension of disbelief, which is this show. You know, we need to relax. Yeah. Yeah. But also, she kind of knew that he'd be fine. I think she kind of knew.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because what if,
that's a good point.
You know what I mean? I just think that, and what if, okay, just, there's something for you. What if they go on this ride and Jon falls and dies and she comes back? What does she say? Your king of the north has died because of me. Or, you know, it's just like, what? You know, I was thinking of all that, but that's, I thought it was good to have it in this episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was good to have it in this episode. I didn't mind the CGI. I loved more when they're kissing and the dragon's looking at them. And that was, I don't know, it was kind of fun. Listen, this show, we don't get many of these moments, these breathers. It's intense. For how many seasons things have been happening that we don't like and we're just like, why do we watch the show? Because it's phenomenal. But it's not a happy, happy show. And to get a break, we're coming back after a year and a half, and to get that break of just them having a moment, aside from sex, just having a first date, having just a little fun, like,
yeah,
what's wrong with that?
You know, I agree with you, and it's so funny, man. We've been doing this actually coming week, Solo, is going to be 11 years that I've been podcasting, and I think you started like a month after, or maybe even before. Like,
I think you started in March or April, and I was in June or July.
Yeah. So we've been doing this 11 years. So when we started talking about things like a setting the table episode, a breather episode, oh, this is moving fast, this is moving slow, and we used a terminology that we know from creating things and being on sets, and, you know, this is our business. Now these have become kind of common parlance, right? Like, people know about this stuff because of the golden age of TV, and TV is really more popular, I think, than film. Like, the hot things are usually TV shows. You know, now you have Endgame coming up, but that's different. That's a huge, big thing, a culmination. So people complain, dude. They complain when the show is going, you know, everything's going so fast, everything's happening so fast. But then if they did a half hour of Littlefinger and Sansa in a carriage on their way to the Eyrie, you'd be like, this is the stupidest episode ever. They're wasting time.
Bottle episode.
Yeah. They didn't have enough money. Exactly. It's a bottle episode. No, look, they're doing their best. And that whole thing was a little cheesy. I think it would have been, from the CGI perspective, maybe if they stayed with the wide shots, because I watched it again for like a third time, and I was like, it's really the close-ups of when Jon is kind of almost falling off the dragon.
Yeah.
It looks like How to Train Your Dragon stuff, you know? It's kind of silly. And when the dragon looked over, but you're right. Like, we need these little breathers. We need to see Jon and Dany relax around each other and stop being generals and queens and kings and just be people who are young and in love and in a crazy, world-shattering, dramatic situation. You know?
Which is about to hit the fan.
Yeah, this is not like they're just hanging out, people. They rode a dragon because the undead are coming to kill all of humanity. It's a little intense. So, you know, like, it's good to...
You need a release.
Yeah, it's good to chill out. So I thought it was kind of silly, but then again, I watched it, and by the third time, I was kind of like, this is kind of fun. The dragon swoops down and hits the snow off the tree, and, you know.
Oh, I love that sound of the snow.
Yeah, they get nice shots over Winterfell, and you get to see all of Winterfell, and, you know, I mean, I thought it was kind of cool. So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. I will say, I think saddles would have been better. I'll say it again. Saddles, you got need a dragon saddle. They look awesome.
Yeah, no, I dug it. It wasn't too long. It was, everyone's like, oh, you know, John should have, you know, him riding a dragon should be a big event or big, you know, I thought that was a pretty big event. He's on a damn dragon, but it's where else are you going to put it? You know, then it becomes cheesy if all of a sudden the Night King's about to kill him and he jumps on a dragon.
Thank
it's like,
you.
Woohoo!
I was going to say the same thing, Solo. So if it had been quote unquote dramatic or as some, I hear some people again using the common parlance, like, you know, if he had learned in action that it was, you know, people would have been, people would say, oh, he couldn't have done that so quickly. Now we have a little bit of a scene. He kind of pulls down, right? And the dragon goes with him. He's learning to actually control it and ride it. And we have the next time he gets on and battles and does some ridiculous, like, sword battle on a dragon, we're going to be like, okay, it's kind of feasible. You know what I mean? Like, he'll be surfing on the dragon and jumping off and doing crazy stuff. They'll be switching dragons. They'll be going through hoops on dragons.
Whoa, Avatar.
You know? It's going to be like Dragon World, you know? But we're going to have to accept it then. So it's good that we got this little scene here.
Exactly. And it was the right time for it.
Yeah.
Because this shit's going to get dark.
Yeah.
And it's, and things are going to, people are going to die and things are going to happen that we're like, oh my gosh, emergency podcast. But you know what? If you have been watching this show, you know, don't expect happy, happy things. I hope the end is sort of somewhat happy, but I'm not, after watching the show, I don't expect it.
All right, you know, man, before we head out, because we've been going, this is a long one. As per the usual, love talking to you, Soli, you're the best. What do you think about John finding out the big reveal here that he is Aegon, right? Is he Aegon or, right? Isn't that his name?
Your guess is as good as mine. I believe so.
Aemon?
Lego,
no.
My ego.
He's Aegon Targaryen. He's the quote unquote true king. His lineage, his line is that the Mad King had three children, Dany, her brother, who we saw killed by Khal Drogo, and her other brother, Rhaegar, who married Jon's aunt, who was Ned's sister. And Jon is the heir to the Targaryen Empire and the Seven Kingdoms. And what do you think is going to happen? Is Dany going to bend the knee to him? Is she going to say no? I mean, what do you foresee happening? And let's talk a little bit about that, because that's like the big deal here.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we found out early on. I don't know why Bran wanted Sam to tell him now. Maybe it's to set things to come. It needs to happen now.
Interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, right? I was thinking, like, when I watch it again, I was like, is he telling him now because he's angry and he wants him to warn him about Dany?
I don't know.
But then again, we get into the whole Bran thing.
Yeah.
The Bran of it all.
The Bran of it all. For some reason, I don't think Dany would bend the knee for him. She'd have to give. I mean, granted, if they got married, even though they're aunt and nephew, I guess they could get married. She'd be the queen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she could still be the queen.
But
see,
she's
that's
not
where
the,
I don't know.
She's
what,
not. Oh, there's a different term for it. Like, it's like when they called, when Cersei became the queen, they said something like the queen in some, like, because
the queen in just or something.
Yeah,
I forget what it was
there
called.
There were words
queen
to
in...
it in this world. And it's because, of course, it's always, you know, this is a male dominated world. And the men are, when you're king, you're just king. So they don't have a separate word for it. But with the queen, I remember Qyburn said something, but I don't think she'd accept that. Now, don't forget, Davos, Tyrion, and Varys in their awesome conversation kind of talk about them ruling together.
You know, I don't know. Does John keep this to himself? Does he say something to her? I mean, how does this all affect? And they got a big war with the White Walkers coming. I can't see it getting resolved just yet.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he puts it off because the war is, you know, the first war is coming. I'm kind of back and forth confused with that whole thing. I know it's a big deal. I just, man, my brain is fried.
I think that I agree with your initial reaction that it's going to be pretty hard for Dany to stop with the, I'm the breaker of chains, the queen of this, I'm the powerful, I'm the best, I was born to mm-hmm. rule, I'm the chosen one. That's all she's ever said. She's completely arrogant about it, and her rule is based upon her lineage and who she is. And I just think that even when she finds out about John, she'll come up with something else, like, I have the dragons, or, you know, it's my army, or I like you, my initial reaction is, I just don't see how Danny's going to accept this.
And how does the people of the North, they find out he's a Targaryen. He's also a Stark. I mean, but I guess they look at more the Targaryen part,
it's
I
the
guess.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Would they even back him anymore? Or
no, I mean, he's not Ned Stark's son. Right. And if it was the normal way of things, and if Ned's sister had not run off and married Rhaegar, then she would have just married someone and stayed at Winterfell, and her son would have been somebody else. But it's the fact that she married the Targaryen prince, next in line to the throne, and had a male heir, that we are in this situation. So John is in effect, it harkens back to the thing that John actually said to Theon, you're both Ironborn and Northerner. You're both. John could mm-hmm. try to say he's both, but I don't know what people are going to, I mean, you got the Northern don't want to listen to him. They're like behind Sansa. Nobody likes Dany. Now Dany's going to be against John, and they got the White Walkers coming. It is kind of a mess here.
Yeah, I know. I think
it was a quiet episode, but it was kind of a soap opera.
Dude, there was a lot. There's a lot going on. When people say nothing happened, are you kidding me? But I just think Saved by the Bell, there's a war coming, the White Walkers. So that may, we'll see who survives. And if most of the North is wiped out, I guess they're not going to have much of a choice. But I don't think good things are to come for the North Bannermen and your Lady Mormonts and those. I have a feeling they're all going to get kind of wiped out.
Anyway,
it'll be on a smaller scale dealing with this. I really don't think if it was season 4 and we found this out, there'd be a lot going on. But
there's only 5 episodes left.
Yeah. So I think it might be something that will be determined later, because think about how many times in this episode, I think it was at least twice, where we wanted to hear an answer and then it was interrupted or the scene cut to certain things. So it was like, are you going to burn Sansa?
Yeah, there's a, you know, and that's good. There, you're right. So there's a theme of, hey, we're going to have to figure some things out after, you know, that has been a reoccurring theme. And maybe that's mm-hmm. the road that'll go. They'll just have an uneasy truce. You know, hey, look, this is very crazy. No one foresaw this. Dany going to bend the knee. No, I'm powerful. I have this army. And John's like, well, look, what are we going to do? We got to roll with it. That's kind of what he's done at this point. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Because John, he didn't, you know, he's given up rights. He doesn't want to be, I mean, to find out, I don't even know if he wants to be the true king. So he may tell Dany but not have it known. Yeah. And then she eventually comes around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like they kind of deals with his girlfriend, Dany, and they deal with their thing together. And then they tell everyone else, hey, like, chill, we don't need to tell the whole North I'm a Targaryen right now.
But for the better of the people and what's to come, this is not something we can air out there.
That's interesting. You know, it's funny. Yeah, we come up with these crazy theories, Solo, but we've seen over the years that sometimes people in, you know, good writing is just people making a very realistic human decision. Like, let's shelve this for a little while, guys. And we go on. But I do want to say this before we go, as you've been saying, the dead are here. We got this new intro, which was awesome. And everybody loved it. But one of the things I want to mention is they replaced, like in the beginning of it, a lot of the clockwork stuff is the ground turning over and becoming white, you know, like that kind of signals the impending White Walkers. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about that. And you see it surround the House of Umber, and then it's a different house. I know I'm not naming the castle, right? I apologize, people. And then it kind of comes down and it ends with this horror scene. So that's kind of telling you this is what's coming.
Yeah. And also, so the one house was House Glover, Danny Glover's house.
Mm-hmm. Corey Glover from Living Color.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, are we going to see a scene where the White Walkers come and destroy that house like nobody's business?
I think that is what we're going to see. Definitely. That's why they mentioned it. And don't forget that Lady Karstark arrives there. So I think we might see the Karstarks taken out too while she's at Winterfell.
Yeah, because I got to believe we're going to see some White Walkers on their way to Winterfell taking people out like nobody's business.
Yeah, dude. They've got to. They can't. Look, with so many episodes left, and I haven't watched the trailer for the next episode, by the way. I had so much fun going in clean last week. I might be on a live stream this weekend and watch the trailer, so we're not going to talk about that tonight, Solo. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
But
I don't even remember what's in it.
I'm just staying clean. I haven't seen pictures, nothing, descriptions, anything. But I've got to think that in this episode, we got to get a little bit of White Walker, more action here. They got big budgets. And I think you're right. House Glover and the Karstarks maybe too. They mentioned these so many before. I think we're going to see what we saw the end of at the end of this episode. Maybe we even begin with the next episode, the real battle, them just destroying people, you know?
Yeah, I have a feeling that's coming. And, you know, again, like you said, they threw the thing. Well, they're not coming. They're going to hang out in there. And I'm like, they're done. They're done. It's perfect. Yep. You have that in there for a reason. Because listen, this is the final season. Every line of dialogue and every in a good show, everything means something. It's not just throwaway stuff.
Yeah. Oh, come on. They pour over these scripts and foreshadowing is so much in this, and they do it in filming too, like they did the beginning here with Bran climbing. We're going to see, I think one thing to look for too, as we're watching these episodes, is the callbacks are going to come so much more fast and furious. And I say, trust ourselves as they happen in episode and we're watching, oh, this is like that. Oh, I bet we're going to see that. You probably will.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. We're done.
All right. We're done.
This was awesome.
First deep dive of the year. We went from initial reaction to now we're deep diving. And I think this is more our niche of me and you. I like this a couple days later and just kind of no structure, just doing it because, you know, everyone's heard recaps and gone through stuff. Now it's just we get down to the down and dirty. And I can't wait to listen to Mike and Tracy on the feedback episode on Friday because they're a great tandem and it gives Podcast Winterfell yet another couple of voices, two smart individuals who I can't wait to listen to, and it's perfect for the weekend to get ready going into the next episode on Sunday.
Couldn't have said it better myself. PodcastWinterfell.com. Follow us on Twitter at, what are we, Winterfell Pod or Podcast Winterfell? Look us up on Twitter. We got a Facebook page.
Winterfell Pod.
Winterfell Pod.
I typed it in wrong the other day. So that's how I remember.
And hey, speaking of that, because Matt made that, go listen to Matt's audio blog. Matt and the Sirens are covering each episode. He's doing his brothel mates and all the stuff that he used to do on this show.
Oh, yeah.
So he's doing that again over there. So do your three words and your brothel mates. And he's got other things that he's got going on there, too. So check him out. Check out all the other great podcasts. I almost said Lost podcast. Check out all the other great Game of Thrones. So, man, I've been having so much fun on Twitter and Facebook and in the community. And people are having fun and just sharing memes. And it's... this is going to be a fun 6 weeks, man, and I look forward to doing it with you, Solo. This is the flagship of Podcast Winterfell, and we'll be back also with a staple, the call-in on YouTube. We're going to do it on YouTube, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm excited. This is, you know, after Lost, there wasn't really – we tried Alcatraz. We tried a few things. this kind of crept up, and, you know – well, I know back in season one, we did an emergency pod on the film list, and we both said Jon Snow was the key to all this early on, without reading books, without spoilers, without anything. But it just shows you, like, over time, it was like, wow, this show really, this show has really done it. It's a little different than Lost, but yet it has a lot of the same elements that brings us together. So I love, like, you know, we get a show every once in a while, you know, Lost, and then it took a few years, but then Game of Thrones came out. It just happens, yep. You know?
It's awesome, and I love buddy. It. It's awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Peace out.
Peace out.